Hello, and welcome to the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. In each episode of the show, we shine a spotlight on the women who are making strides and changing lives. Hello, and welcome to the Truly Amazing Women TV show. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, the creator of this company that honors women who are making strides and changing lives, and also the host of the show. Today, we are here with Eliel Finn. We just created a new website for her, elielfinn.com, which will help people understand what intuitive is. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Eliel. So I'm honored to know Eliel. She's been my guide since I met her through a dear friend in 2011. She's an intuitive who has access to a lot of different levels of awareness and information, including looking into someone's patterns, that what people are stuck in, and she helps bring clarity to present-day issues like divorce, other relationship issues, career problems, financial issues, infertility, grief, and the list goes on. So welcome to the show, Eliel. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Hope. I'm happy to be here.
Yay. All right, so let's talk about you. How did you get into this line of work?
Well, I started off being a very odd little kid. I have synesthesia, which means your senses are combined. So I see sound, hear color. When I was little, I would look at people and I wasn't quite sure what to be paying attention to because I would see colors around them. Emotions had shape and texture. And it took me a while to figure out how to translate a lot of what I was perceiving into words. And I didn't have a lot of context for those things. People in my family tend to be fairly intuitive. Everybody, I think, starts out pretty intuitive, particularly as little children, and then we sort of lose that when we go to school. So mine didn't go anywhere. In fact, part of it's, you know, was really increased in my 20s when I had a spiritual awakening that was pretty spontaneous. And not only did I have a really increased sense of well-being and connection to sort of everything, but also a lot of my abilities and intuitions and just senses picked up. So then I spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out how to manage that and how to be grounded enough in my everyday life to function. So just for example, for me, when I look at people now, if they give me permission, I look at someone and I can see all their lifetimes and what their energy is up to. And I don't necessarily translate that information into color and texture the way I used to. But it's pretty intense. And I found out pretty quickly about boundaries around, you know, in terms of looking at people. You don't want to invade someone's privacy. I don't personally care for that myself. So one of the things that's been really important to me is to wait till people gave me permission or asked me specifically before I say anything. But I do think that most of us have intuitive experiences. I just have a lot of practice.
So there's a lot of things that you brought up there that I think are really essential. First of all, a lot of people are skeptical about this. What do you say to someone like, that just sounds like crazy talk?
I'm totally fine with skepticism. In fact, I kind of enjoy people who are skeptics because I think it's good to question people. And I also think that a lot of our culture is all about listening to authority rather than questioning authority, which I think is a really good idea on a lot of levels. And I think, too, one of my real strong intentions is to remind people that we do know what's going on in our own bodies. We do know what we need and what we don't need. And part of what I do is to try to remind people about their own knowing so that they can question. So I also just want to say that if this doesn't resonate with someone, I don't have a problem with that. You know, I think people should find what works for them. And I do have people who start out skeptical and then go, oh, this is actually helpful. So there's a practical element of this too. If, you know, I can sit and just have interesting visions, but what good are they? You know, if they're not really helping anything or anyone and they're distracting me from actually making a living, I don't find it useful. So I do, you know, tend to ask clients what is that they want? Do they want to improve something? You know, what would they like to expand in their lives? And then we work with that. So I really let my clients lead in terms of what they want. And some people don't know what they want. And then I ask them questions to help clarify that. So it's still really up to the person to take responsibility for their own life. I don't tell people what to do. I give them information to hopefully help them make better decisions.
Well, I want to get into the whole ethics of all of this and what you look at and what you don't. So what does a session look like? So I call you up and...
People call for a lot of different reasons. I work with people who are parents, professional people. Some people are going through transitions. I work with a lot of people who are going through grief and they've lost someone and they just need some comforting and also a bigger understanding of what's going on. For me, a session can be very different depending on if someone has a specific issue or if they just want a general overall, who am I, what am I doing here kind of thing. And, you know, again, I can't tell somebody what to do, but I can definitely give them an understanding of what they've been up to in their lifetimes, things that have been really important, things that are, you know, they're really passionate about. Because a lot of the characteristics that we have that we think are personality traits sometimes are soul deep, and I can see those patterns over time and what we follow through on. I can also kind of see where people get stuck, particularly in relationship issues or career paths, or, you know, I have a lot of clients who are very spiritually minded, but they haven't spent much time figuring out how to earn a living in their lifetimes, and so they're still not very good at it. So it's grounding and really focusing on what are your strengths and also what are the places you need to kind of focus a little bit and work a little bit at.
So we talk a lot about it when you and I about patterns, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And but this concept of past lives, can you just explain that a little bit?
Well, I have to say I use the term loosely mm-hmm. because, again, when I was little and as I've progressed, I mean, I look at people and all of your lifetimes are right there right now. But it's easier to, because time isn't linear, but that can really throw people off. So using the phrase past lives is like saying this is what you've been done, you know, and you're over, even though we still carry a lot of it. So I look at kind of the simultaneity of things, but in terms of talking to people, it makes more sense of, oh, you know, in this lifetime, I'm a woman, you know, this is what I do for a living. I might have had another experience in another time. And I think it's helpful, particularly, it's comforting, I think, for people to recognize, oh, yeah, those are my patterns. Oh, gee, yeah, I do that. And it's not a condemning kind of thing. I mean, I really look at this with a great deal of compassion because, hey, we're all human. We mess up. We're learning. Some of us learn a little faster than others, and some of us learn more painfully than other people do. But I think in general, it can just be helpful to have a bigger understanding of who you are. And I often think that if I could just like plug people into a wall and show them all their lifetimes, they would have so much more self-esteem just to understand mm-hmm. what they've been through and why it's been hard. And, you know, to just have that broader understanding, I think
that's
is helpful.
Self-compassion. Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it's really useful when you tell me about my past lives, because it's like, I know that. And whether I believe it, which I actually do, or I use it as a metaphor, because mm-hmm. I know I have a lot of skeptical loves in my life who are like, that's just crazy. I'm like, I don't care what you think, it's what I think, but I'll say, but it's a story, it's a metaphor, mm-hmm. And it resonates with me, which is also why I have tons of friends who I've encouraged to call you. And by the way, you do this by phone. I mean, you do it in person, clearly, but we mm-hmm. didn't meet. I called you first in 2011. We met in 2016. Mm-hmm. When I came to Oregon and you did the Reiki training with me, which is something that you also do. You're a Reiki master and you train others to be masters. So it's moving energy. So let's shift into this concept of you're reading our energy, you're reading my energy or our videographer's energy, you know. So what does that look like and feel like, and how is it important?
Well, again, I don't do that without someone's permission.
Clearly.
And I do have clients all over the world, so I do a lot by phone and Skype. And what I found is that it's almost like, and especially when I was a kid, everybody to me had a unique energy or soul or something that set them apart from anyone else. And one of the things I found really interesting is that most of us have the experience of meeting someone and instinctively really liking them or despising them, and we don't really have a good reason for that. And it could be that, you know, they remind you of someone you don't like, or you just don't get a good feeling from them. But sometimes it's because we have old stuff with them from some other time. And so that's where it's also helpful to be able to look at, oh, what is my relationship with that person? And let's clear that up so that we can go forward and have something new, or we're done and we don't have to, you know, continue. Reading energy is kind of a funny thing. When I was a kid, I didn't know what I was looking at. I didn't have a word for it. It was just this glowy thing that happened around people and objects and plants and rocks and pretty much everything. So I just treated everything as if it were alive, because I couldn't understand the difference until one of my brothers told me, no, it's alive if it's breathing, and that helped. But I've also met dead people who were more lively than some live people I know, so it was a little confusing. So to me, energy is sort of like what we're made of, and this is just a particularly dense form so that we can touch it, but everything is, I mean, if I actually just turn on all my senses, it's a little bit like being in a, everything just turns into blobs of light, which isn't very effective in terms of dealing with the world. So you know, one of the things I think is interesting about, and I've met other people with synesthesia who have, you know, their senses combined. It's an interesting way to interact with the world, because it's kind of amazing. And at the same time, this density is also fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess one of the other things I would just like to say is that for me, this is really fun.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of having respect for other people and their energy. And like I said, I don't, when I walk out the door, I have everything on little dimmer switches and I turn everything down so that I don't get overwhelmed. But also because I feel like it's none of my business
mm-hmm.
what's going on with other people unless they're asking me, you know?
And that comes to the ethics of all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's lots of folks out there. In fact, before I met you, I wasn't a person that looked for a psychic to guide me. But there was a point in 2011 where I'd started my business and then things start, you know, I started in 2008 at the height of the downturn and then everything
mm-hmm.
was crumbling by 2000. Everybody had lost faith in all their reserves. And so I thought, is this going to be okay? And my dear friend, she's like, I can hook you up. And she told me that she had talked to you and she told me what you told her. And I thought, this woman is the real deal. Like, because it just sounded like you weren't woo-woo-y. You were like very grounded and you were telling her what I knew about her. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that again is why I encourage a lot of my friends who are in conflict or in struggle to call you, because you look inside and you tell me what I know, but I some reason's fuzzy or I forgot. And so you bring that out. But of course it's always with permission. You never say, all right, I'm gonna tell you what this person who's you're having a conflict with is going on. You're like, that's none of my business, but I'm gonna read the energy between the two of you
mm-hmm.
because you're trying to help me work it through. So encouraging me to use my intuition. So talk a little bit about that.
I think, again, in working with people, you know, first of all, I think it's really an honor to be allowed in someone's space, to be allowed to, you know, enter their energy field and see who they are. And I like, it's an honor and it's also kind of fun because, you know, where people go, it's, I like watching people light up. You know, because
mm-hmm.
I think when people really get in touch with who they are, they get excited. Like, oh, yeah, I forgot that part of myself. I think there are a lot of people out there who are intuitive and everybody reads on a different level. And there are people that I would be completely ineffective for. There are just certain things I'm not really interested in. I do.
Like, where's my pocketbook or something?
Yeah, I did have a guy call me once and say, where's my wallet? And I'm like, dude, I don't do that, although I think you know where it is. And he goes, well, yeah, I was just messing with you. But I'm not interested in that. And I do tend to have clients who are really actively working on growing and changing and shifting things in their lives. So that willingness is important. That's why I go back to the skeptics. I don't mind if people are skeptical and have a lot of questions. I'm just not willing to work with people who aren't interested because it's a waste of both of our time. So I do think that there are a lot of people out there doing work on different levels. The one thing I've found, and this is from my own experience, and I work with a lot of therapists actually, it's really helpful to look at your own ego stuff around emotions and your own patterns so that you don't let that get in the way of what the information that comes in. So that I feel like the clearer you are, the clearer the messages are for other people. And I just have seen a lot of people who don't do that. They don't do that work. They don't really look at their own stuff. They get
from the therapist
yeah.
point of view, the psychic point of view.
The sort of psychic thing. You know, I think using your intuition to harm people or to control people or to lord it over them because you think you know more, most of us really do know ourselves better than anyone else. We just need to be reminded of that. So that my intention, I really, you know, if someone's not interested, it's not my business. And I do think it's really important for people whenever you're working with someone is to really check out how you feel around them. I think we've all been through enough trauma where we don't need to go to someone who traumatizes us further. And, you know, I do know people who've been really afraid. They'll say, oh, I'm really scared of coming to see you because, you know, I had a bad experience. Or it's like really scary. And I'm like, not really, you know. Again, I just think people would have a lot more self-esteem if they had a clue of who they are really, you know, on all their levels. And I feel like we all go through hard times. I deal with a lot of people who've been through grief situations. I've had my own experiences of loss. And we're all human. And, you know, we all have certain senses. You know, I had a gentleman call me once. He goes, well, I don't believe in this intuition stuff. I just go with my gut. And I said, well, whatever you want to call it, that's fine. But I think, you know, when we were in more tribal societies that were more, you know, connected to the land, that we operated from those places a little bit more. And we've come away from that, I think, in modern terms. So, you know, partly what I like to do is remind people of their own instincts. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, ultimately that might put me out of a job, but that's okay with me.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's part of the work that you do and that we're hoping to do together is go out and do workshops, help people tune up their own intuition so that they can mm-hmm. have a happier life, right? Because that's what it's about. We talk about how it's fun. You laugh with your clients. You laugh with me yeah. all the time. You bring the levity to it because it feels so heavy sometimes, right? Yeah. You're carrying this around. And yet, if you can just take that off your shoulders, the world feels different, but it's practice. And that's that self-love that you talk a lot about.
Well, and I think, again, we start out, you know, I talked to lots of little kids. I was a preschool teacher for years, and they were having pretty much the same experience as I was having. We had great conversations. And then they would hit school, and it would all get shut off. Because in some ways, you know, how your society works is how you're sort of oriented in terms of how your mind works and how your perceptions work. And there are a lot of indigenous people that intuition is just part of life. And I've hung out with them. It's just great. You know? And children, same way. But again, we grow up and we grow out of those feelings, knowing what we feel. We're told, no, that's not okay. And we turn out to be ashamed of things that are natural. Mm-hmm. So part of, I think, trusting yourself and checking with your own body and going, wait a minute, I have a bad feeling in my stomach here. What is that? It's practice. Kind of going back to what you started out like, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that there's an element of fun and play and curiosity and exploration that also comes with that, with creativity, with going back to that, wait a minute, it's really okay to be me, fundamentally. Yeah. And it's just, like I said, it's exciting to watch people.
And it's exciting to think that more people could access this. So I'm curious, can you share some of the experiences that you've had with clients that would be willing to, obviously not saying it who they are, but mm-hmm. like just patterns that you've seen in relationship or grief or like you were telling me about pets and some other things, yeah. fertility issues?
Yeah, I actually have such a wide range of clients that I work with. You know, I've had pregnant women who were suffering from depression, who didn't want their baby to wind up that way. And so we would work with the kid in the womb and go, hey, that's not your stuff. You don't need to pick mm-hmm. that up. And the kid comes out and is really happy, you know, just a really happy little guy. And, you know, I've worked with people who've lost pets or family members. And, you know, I'm more of a soul specialist in terms of, I don't like, you know, dial people up and talk to dead people about where they put the, you know, gems or whatever, you know, it's more like, what are they up to and what state of consciousness are they in? And people are comforted to know that their person is okay. And usually the person who's passed on is fine and we're the ones who are having a really hard time. But it's also just comforting to sort of check in. And for me, it's a little bit like, you know, dialing someone up on a phone, you know, and sometimes they don't want to talk, but sometimes they do. So I have people who check on pets that have died. And the other thing that can happen is, you know, if you're having a really hard time getting over a loss or you're going through some kind of transitions that's really difficult, sometimes getting a bigger perspective on what's going on. I talked to a woman once who was going through a really horrible divorce and she was just devastated. And I was trying really hard not to just go, yippee, because I knew, you know, it was a really good thing for her. And she thought I was a little whacked because I'm all excited. And she goes, I'll never forget how excited you were for me. And I'm in like this pit of despair. And you're like, oh, but this is going to be really good. And she said it made no sense to her. And then she kind of came out of it and all these amazing things happened. So, you know, sometimes, and I don't necessarily focus on future events because it can change. You know, we have free will. We can shift things. But sometimes it's so exciting, I can't help but jump up and down a little bit. So.
Yeah, you've done that with me a time or two. I'm just like, I'm not saying it, but I'm glad you are. So, well, I think these stories are really helpful. If you can share more examples, because people are, I think everyone wants to know. Mm-hmm. They want to know that they're okay, that the people who have passed are okay, that their future's going to be fine, that their children are going to be fine.
So one of my favorites is a young woman who passed away. She was a teenager. And she, you know, I had talked to her before, and she said, can you give my mom a message? And she was funny. She said, write everything down in the order I give it to you. And I'm like, okay, you're like really picky. So I wrote it all down and then I waited. And I had been thinking about trusting your own timing and how important that is. And I waited and I didn't call the mom and I didn't give her the information. I'm like, what's going on? You know, I have this. Why am I not giving it to her? I waited 3 or 4 days and then I sent the info to the mom and she goes, oh my God, I just this morning asked and she had answered every question. And so that was so comforting for her to know that her daughter was still there And that when, and I said to the kid later, I said, what was the 3 days? And she goes, well, you did ask to trust your own timing, so I was multitasking.
All right, so this gets into that what the hell are you talking about kind of thing.
Yeah.
But so when this time-space continuum, that metaphysical idea that we kind of are, a lot of I particularly am intrigued by, but it's very hard to here on Earth where it's kind of dense and you want things to move and sometimes they don't. So how does this work? Like, I think that's the internal question, right? Like, how
and
it
I got to just say, you know, people have come to me and they've read a lot of books on what happens after you die and they have all these ideas. And every time I come up with some formula for how it works, I get a client who blows it out of the water. And then I have to go, I guess it's a little more complex than that. So I've found that particularly, you know, people who've been raised in specific religions and those are really comforting for them to have those beliefs. I think that's totally fine. I just haven't found anything that fits any of it exactly. So, for instance, you know, I talked to somebody once who her husband had passed away and she was really worried and upset and devastated. And, you know, she finally got to the point where she could talk about it and she wanted to know how he was doing. And, you know, I've found that people who aren't in bodies are not limited the way we are. And every soul's a little different. But her husband was a really advanced soul. And so where he was hanging out, I'm talking to this woman who's devastated in here. And I'm talking to this guy who's totally blissed out and not in a body. And I'm trying to hold the space for this. And she said, can he see me? And he goes, oh, honey, when you get out of your body, you're going to laugh. There's no separation here. I am you. Mm. It was like...
Serious.
And afterwards, I mean, I probably had like... I mean, that was... It was amazing. Mm-hmm. So... I've also seen really pissy dead people. One guy didn't want to leave his motorcycle. And I'm like, dude, where you are, you don't really need a motorcycle, you know. And another guy refused to believe he was dead, and he was really angry because he said, I would never have been that irresponsible. And I said, well, so, you know, I don't necessarily have that be the focus. I mean, I know there are people who are mediums, and that's exactly what they do. And for me, it's just a little bit of a side thing. Mm-hmm. But it's very comforting. I lost my own daughter 5.5 years ago. And, you know, it's what got me through is being able to talk to her and see her, which was a little disconcerting sometimes, because she would show up when I was grieving, and I'm like, go away, I miss you. You know what I mean? I'm grieving you. You know. And she also cracked a lot of jokes, and she kept saying, you know, Mom, I'm really surprised you're taking this so seriously. And I said, well, I'm here in your body missing you. You don't really have that problem. So it's a really different experience, and for me... You know, my whole life is like I walk around and I look like a normal person, and yet I am having all these things go on that I usually don't talk about because it just wigs people out. So I've been really lucky because I get to have these experiences that are really comforting. So one of the things I found is that just the contrast between being in a body that falls apart and we're eventually going to die and having this infinite part of ourselves that keeps going. And, you know, most moms know that when their kid pops out, they're pretty much them. You know, they're uniquely them. And we tend to, you know, go with that. We do know who we are when we start out. One thing for me, you know, in dealing with grief is that I still had to go through all of the pain and agony over losing my kid. And at the same time, I'm having these, you know, experiences of her standing over her body at the funeral home going, God, I hate what they did with my hair. And I was going, Maya, I can't laugh right now. It's really inappropriate. You know, it was just so funny. But weird. And, you know, I wound up, you know, there's this, even though it's been terrible, it's also been kind of funny because I had an argument one time with a spirit of this woman showed up and she goes, yeah, can you give my friend a message? I said, I don't know her well enough to do that and I'm uncomfortable and, you know, I don't really do that kind of thing. She goes, well, if I were in a body, would you, and I just said, hey, could you, you know, let my friend know this? She goes, would you have a problem? I said, no. And she goes, so are you going to discriminate against me because I don't have a body?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God.
So what did you do?
I did the message and the woman thought it was weird. And I went, I don't really want to do this again. But one thing I found is when I met my current husband, we were going on a walk once and these spirits would just show up out of nowhere. And he finally goes, you need to get spiritual call waiting. And it really worked. So now I don't have... You know, and part of this is the boundaries and the ethics around, you know, being permeable because you can just get overwhelmed. So I've figured out how to manage, like I said, having dimmer switches and managing what I'm willing to pick up and what I'm not willing to. And I feel like a lot of times people who have intuitive gifts think that it's out of control and that they have no choice. And I've learned how to manage my equipment. And so I do get people who are really sensitive and are trying to figure out how to deal with it. And we kind of, you know, work on ways to protect them in the world so they're not, you know, vulnerable. And I feel like, you know, working with sensitive people is really fun. And I have kids, I have teenagers, I have, you know, any age person who's just open and doesn't want to shut down and wants to figure out a way to be in the world and have their filters going. I mean, we do a lot of work with that.
And that will be actually, speaking of integrity, spiritual integrity is what we're calling your new podcast show on Incandescent mm-hmm. Radio. So we're going to record every month. You're going to have a new session where you're talking about all kinds of things. And I think the ethics is really important. Mm-hmm. What this means, you know, how to have a session, like the tactics of it. So you told me you need my name and my willingness for you to do a reading. And as simple as that. And I also love that you have this series of books. So when Maya died, you started writing poetry. And you said, you know, you've done it every day in the last 5.5 years. And now these two gorgeous books, which we'll show our readers, are for sale. And they help. You posted them on Facebook for your huge fan base. And they really resonate with people because grief is such a hard, horrible thing. And whether you've cataclysmically lost a child or a love, you know, a boyfriend or a girlfriend or, you know, any type of loss, that grief process is really gut-wrenching.
And I think that we have a whole country of people who have unresolved grief, and it can really mess people up. And I feel like as a culture, we don't really honor grief. Most people work, you know, they go back to work immediately or they have a few days off and that's it. And we're not real functional. So, you know, part of my intention was to get me through my grief, and I wanted to be as thorough as possible. So I explored it from every possible angle. And I would still see Maya, and I would have dreams about her. And so I would also write down her reports on where she was. So, I mean, it's kind of comprehensive. But I also interviewed a lot of people about their grief experiences. I wanted to know what it was like for them and put that to words. And it's been really helpful, even rereading it for myself. It's been comforting. And I feel like, again, I just think that it's such a universal experience. And one of my goals while I was grieving was to not let my grief be bigger than my love. And I didn't always make it, but it's interesting feeling like I'm a happy person and I'm still grieving, and I probably will, you know, always be grieving on some level, and that you can manage that, and it's not like you forget the person or pretend it never happened or deny it. It's more like you go into it so fully that you kind of pop out the other side, and you have this understanding that we're all, you know, we all suffer, we all lose people, and eventually we'll lose ourselves, you know, our bodies. So I feel like not being afraid of death. I remember right before she died, my daughter said to me, and I thought this was kind of like a weird thing to say, like right, you know, in the moment, because we were with my Felties and my art and we were selling it. And she said, you know, Mom, having you for Mom, at least I don't have to be afraid of death. So that was comforting.
So all of your offerings are really intense, and some of them are like intensely fun. So, for example, you wrote this incredible children's book called The Meadow, which I absolutely love, about, well, you tell us what it's about.
It's about a magic storyteller who shows up in a little town, and he starts telling stories, and amazing things happen when he's telling stories.
And the illustrations are absolutely magnificent. Who was the illustrator?
Nancy Bright, and this is really interesting. I met her through her work. I didn't meet her personally. About 30 years ago, I was in a store and I saw a painting of hers, and I went, someday I'm going to have one of those paintings. And then when I moved to Eugene, Oregon, I saw her booth with her artwork, and I couldn't believe it was her. And I dropped by with some stories, and she said, uh-oh, because people do that all the time with her as an illustrator. But she actually liked my story, so she said, okay, I'll do it. And she did 17 watercolors that are just stunning.
Yeah, they're gorgeous.
And she's also in the middle of, she just started doing it in my second children's book.
Yes, and she also created your Felty World map.
Yes.
Introduce us to the Felty family.
So I started needle felting about 10 years ago, and it's a really fun art. You use needles and to basically stab wool into sculptures. And I had a really vast array of characters that I created, and they all have their own stories. And so each one is unique. You know, I can make everyone who wants one a turnip or whatever, but they all would have a completely different story. Like I said, I had a big variety. I have
stars.
Mythical creatures, sea creatures. I had trees. I even had a rock. Flowers, and creatures that I created that don't exist yet. It's been really fun.
And each of them is part of this world that you've created, this felty world that has a map, mm-hmm. right? Sort of a Lord of the Rings, but felty fun mm-hmm. version of it. And each of these stories is about their professions and how they're kind in the world, which is an amazing way to do kind of what you do at a childlike level. So read one of these stories. Okay. Tell us more about these All characters.
Right. So this is an asparagus. This is Malcolm Asparagus. Malcolm, a veggie and fruits rights activist, champions the freedom of fruits and vegetables to choose not to become food other than for thought. If you want to fill a bowl or become a side dish, that's your right. But some of us want other careers, like finding the cure for wilting and rotting or visiting elderly vegetables in nursing homes. Malcolm enjoys preserving the rights of fruit and vegetables with humans above the age of 3. And the reason I say above the age of 3 is because if kids are putting things in their mouths, these are non-toxic, but they will shrink when they get wet. Yeah. And so they look a little lumpy sometimes yeah. when kids get a hold of them.
I have to hold the asparagus. Okay. I'm a huge fan of the asparagus activist.
And this is Gervais Fox. I'll read his
too. I love the red fox.
Gervais runs the Society for the Preservation of Silliness. He originally got his degree in theater, specializing in stand-up comedy, then switching to all-fours comedy when stand-up proved too taxing. Now Gervais makes sure that the felty community never takes themselves too seriously. He publishes witty ditties in every newspaper and sings outrageous songs while jogging in the felty forest. Gervais enjoys encouraging others to lighten up with humans above the age of 3.
And these characters, truly, they're part of another world that is part of, you know, Felty World News, mm-hmm. which you have created. And we, our video team, is going to turn into a TV series for YouTube that we're going to start talking about these messages that you have, your genius brain, your creative brain has crafted over the decade that you've been doing these, what, 6,000 did you mention mm-hmm. that you've created, and you sell them. They start at 25 and go up.
And they've gone all over the world. We had a map that we put where all the felties had wound up. Iceland, Afghanistan, Iraq, Sri Lanka, Japan, Denmark, Sweden, Germany, France, Switzerland. In fact, I got to the point where I was trying to figure out where they hadn't been.
Aww.
China, Korea.
And some memorials, like people.
And often, you know, I have the felties in stock, and then I also do sort of memorial felties. If people want to give me a photo of a dog or a cat or something, then I can create it out of felt. And I have had people who've taken their memorial felties on trips and then taken photos and sent them to me. So Aww. That's kind of neat.
Yeah, and there's Santa felties and Lincoln felties. Yeah,
and they do holiday felties.
But they all have a meaning. Yeah. It's not just mm-hmm. a throw. In fact, you gave me one several years ago, and it's been traveling with me in my car everywhere I go, which is so fantastic. It really guides me. It's the therapist felty. And that's a part of what I do too. Yeah, so it's really fun and fascinating, and we've created a stop animation yeah. just to get things started. Our team, Nelson Benavides and my son, Dylan Gibbs, and we're gonna keep that going. So stay tuned for that and these amazing books. Thanks. And so let's go from this fun stuff to just something a little bit more serious. So you mentioned that you had lost your daughter. Talk mm-hmm. a little bit about that.
She died from the complications of the flu while she was away at college, and it was very sudden. And everyone says, oh, the worst thing that can ever happen to you is losing your kid. And then, you know, I started talking to people who lost their whole entire family. You know, they lost their country. They, you know, so, I mean, I think that we often compare grief, and it didn't help me to have people say, oh, you're suffering more than anyone else, because I was like, no, wait a minute, I don't want to be separate from others. I want to be part of this human community of grief, because we all are. And I found it to be really, in a strange way, connecting, because, again, we all have losses. We've lost jobs. We've lost sweethearts. We've lost family members. We've lost our sense of self. I think grief is such an intense topic. Again, I feel like because it's such a universal experience, we can either connect through grief or we can isolate ourselves. And mm-hmm. I was really conscious of not wanting to be isolated, you know, and especially when people would say, oh, you're other, you have had a death, and people would be afraid. I mean, I understand that we don't have a lot of culture around death and dealing with it and grief, and people either didn't want to say the wrong thing or they just felt like we needed space. And so what I did was I just finally said to people, look, I need contact. I need you to come hug me. Yeah. And so people would show up and just hug me constantly. It was just awesome. And then because I'm an introvert, then I would want them to go away.
Yeah. You know?
And I feel like what we need when we're grieving changes, day to day, hour to hour, and being able to verbalize what it is that we need, even if we're not clear, is important, because people do want to help. They do want to comfort us. They just don't know how. And I did give people a pass if they said something that was kind of inane, because I could tell if they were coming from a good place, you know? And I feel like, again, we're not all trained in hospice. We're not trained around death. So I could tell when people genuinely really wanted to be of service.
Spiritual integrity again.
And I think too, you know, one thing that I did find from this whole experience is that love really does transcend death. I mean, at first, you know, I didn't want to let go of my daughter, even though she kept going, Mom, you know. And then I didn't want to let go of the grief, because it felt like all I had left of her. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of not really true. And she also showed up once and said, you know, you can feel miserable if you want, but don't do it on my account, you know, which was helpful. And, you know, there's still really hard times. I miss her dearly, you know, and everyone who loved her misses her. And I feel like, you know, if I'm having this experience, you magnify that in the world and everyone's missing someone. So how are we going to comfort each other through that? You know, and I think a lot of people, the things that we rely on, the things that we're comfortable with, even those are a loss sometimes when we lose them, and it can be really devastating. So in terms of, you know, mental health, I think in general, talking about, you know, really deep topics in a way where we're not isolated or separate from them, but that it's a universal experience and we're going to have to deal with it. Because if we don't, I think it harms us. Mm-hmm. So, but again, I just really have come away with this whole thing. I think you can go through these kind of experiences and you can just kind of curl in on yourself and you know, shrink, or you can go, okay, I'm going to boldly open myself up and see what happens. And it can really be a foundation of really incredible growth.
And one thing that I absolutely love is that as you were grieving Maya, you wrote a poem every day and turned them into these amazingly gorgeous books, 1 Year AM and Uncover the Sun. You know, and these are just incredibly touching. You posted them on Facebook so that your incredible fan base could read them and grieve with you or get through their own grief or appreciate mm-hmm. where you were. And there were millions of likes for those and just beautiful. So talk a little bit about this and how it helped.
For me, writing has always been a way to, you know, process emotion. And also, I would set aside time in the morning and time in the evening to grieve, and then I'd go to work. And so in between, you know, I knew that I would have time at the end of the day to process, and it helped me focus. So that was my process. And just being able to write and put into words things that I think are really difficult sometimes to express, that's one comment I did hear a lot from people is, wow, I've had that experience, but I didn't have words for it. So that felt really like an honor. Mm. And I was also really honored by other people sharing their stories of grief. Yeah. And I did have people who just friended me just to read the poetry. So that was really gratifying. The first book is really the first year, so it's the most raw. And I do have prose in there as well. I tried to really talk about what it's like to physically lose somebody, all the physical things that happen to your body. I mean, I got pretty in-depth. The second book is more the years 2 through 5. I selected the best poems out of that. And, you know, I feel like for people who are just going through a loss, the first book is probably really most appropriate. But I think both of them have a universal kind of appeal. This is, again, mostly about losing a child. But I did really want people to recognize that this is a common universal experience. We have our own personal experience of grief. And we're all human, and we're all going to lose people. And so we can all relate if we let ourselves, and we let ourselves feel. I think for me, they kept me sane, writing. And I do know that, you know, for people, they told me it was very comforting, and they would reread the poems and just kind of look every day to see what I'd written. And, I feel like everybody expresses things differently. And, it was really very helpful for me.
Would you read one of them?
Mm-hmm. So this is called Prescription for Joy, and it's from Uncover the Sun. When you're willing to be patient with your own impatience and have compassion for your own suffering, when you're willing to muss perfection's coiffed little head so that not every hair is in place, when you can both laugh and cry at birth and death and absolutely smile at absolutes while standing in the middle between good things come to those who wait and God helps those who help themselves. When you examine your own judgments as if they're wounds that need addressing. When you're willing to adore every bit of yourself that feels unloved, even if you have no idea what that means. when you're willing to feel how unfeeling you can be in this little human break-apart body that scares so easily, when you're willing to be conscious of just how unconscious you are, then joy seeps into every opening and wells up from under sorrow and flows right out into the world without any effort at all.
Mm. Thank you so much, Eliel. That was absolutely beautiful, touching, heartwarming, just like you.
Thanks, Hope.
So you are watching Truly Amazing Women TV. I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs, your host and the creator of this series for women, by women, about women, for women who are making strides and changing lives. We look forward to talking to you soon. All right. That's it for today's episode of the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. If you're a truly amazing woman or know someone who is, don't hesitate to contact us. Simply log on to www.trulyamazingwomen.com and fill out the proposal form. We've profiled more than 250 women on the site who fit the bill of being truly amazing, and we look forward to honoring more. Who will be our next truly amazing woman? Tune in next week for a new episode on www.incandescentradio.com. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.